Shall we begin?
Why not? Welcome to Frankie Sense and More. It's like she's got a whole lot of goodness for you with a little bit of sass.
Frankie, did you just say...
She sure did. Not to mention, along with...
Whoops.
Join us now as Frankie Picasso and her new co-host mix it up with authors, musicians, and interviews with world-changing people.
Let's begin.
Okay, let's begin now, because it only makes sense.
Well, hello there, and welcome to Frankie Sense and More. We're in April, and we're going to be doing the movie reviews with my co-host, Brent Marchand, our movie critic from Chicago, and I'm Frankie Picasso, your host. Welcome.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, hey.
Good to see you again. And we had a lot of movies today, too, which is kind of unusual for this time of year, because usually this is sort of a cinematic wasteland, but I'll take any good movies that come out. Personally, and this month we have quite a few. So let's get started. Our first film, this is the one that's getting all the attention right now, is the movie Civil War, the latest picture from director Alex Garland. This is a really important film in many ways in terms of offering a very potent cautionary tale to viewers in terms of what could happen if things are allowed to get out of hand. Basically, it tells the story of a quartet of journalists who are trying to make their way from Washington to, from New York to Washington during the time of a civil war. And because things are so screwed up, they have to go by a very circuitous route through Western Pennsylvania and West Virginia to get there. But what that does is this road trip format allows them to see a whole variety of different situations that can come up under circumstances like these. And really, it's following them through this very dangerous path, not just because of the war itself, but also because they're journalists who are trusted about as much as used car salesmen or politicians. And, you know, the various experiences that they go through in trying to get the story with this. Now, one of the things that some people and some critics have complained about is that it doesn't provide enough backstory in terms of the political situation that prompted all this to occur and so forth. But to be perfectly honest, I don't think that's really terribly relevant here. I think what's most important to remember is that when the bullets start flying, ideology goes out the window. And I think that's the point the director was really trying to drive home with this. So, you know, and in the process, warning us to say, don't let it get to this point. Because when the lid is off and the genie's out of the bottle, people are going to start acting crazy, whether they've got a political motivation for it or not.
Yeah, and they've been acting crazy. And I can't even imagine that anybody watching that couldn't even just take that little tiny baby step to say, 2 years ago, I said, we are so polarized, I can see this going to happen. That's how it is right now.
Yeah, so, and the fact that it's coming out this year in an extremely polarized year.
Yes.
Is really significant in terms of, like, pay attention here, you know, not just to what's going on in the political situation, but pay attention to what could happen if things are let loose. I mean, this is a case of madness essentially gone awry with the genie let out of the bottle.
People are not using their common sense anymore. It's just like, I just blinders, and this is tunnel vision, and this is what I believe, and you can't tell me anything else. The Fourth Estate used to be a respected, you know, entity, no longer. It's very, very sad. You can't trust anybody. Nobody trusts anything. You have to use your common sense, people.
Well, and on top of that, you know, the thing that sort of accompanies this madness is the fact that people start to get off on it. I mean, it's like a drug, you know, this sort of adrenaline rush that you get from allowing your pent up anger and frustration just to be let loose, and people shooting anybody just for kicks, you know, finding a convenient target. Doesn't matter what their ideology may or may not be. It's just like, okay, well, all the rules are gone now, so let's have at it.
Yeah. And I think we saw a little bit of that with the past president relaxing some rules and letting the freak fly a little bit. And giving people that, you know, that sanction to say whatever they want, feel whatever.
Well, there's certainly, you know, Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
there's certainly a lot of allusions here to January 6th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's also kind of interesting when you hear about a certain candidate talking about wanting to change the rules. In this film, the president is in his third term.
Okay.
Okay. Well, okay. I mean,
Yeah.
who gets to a third term without changing the Constitution
Yeah.
or, you know,
Exactly. Or
bending the
decide not
rules?
to step down.
Yeah. Now, because the director is so anxious to get his point across, this film can be rather excessive at times. And anybody who's squeamish or faint of heart probably shouldn't go see it. But if you do go see it, pay close attention to what they're trying to tell you, you
There's a
know?
lot of people I know out west that have guns, that have food storage for a couple of years in their basements, and they're not afraid to use them. And they're waiting for this day.
Yep.
They're waiting for this day.
Now, the
Yeah.
thing that I also liked about this film is it features a number of fine performances. I mean, this is probably some of the best work that Kirsten Dunst has ever done.
Nice.
And she's got a great supporting cast behind her. And there's one really, really, really creepy scene in this movie with Jesse Plemons,
Oh, really? With her
who
husband?
is
Oh.
uncredited. And you don't really realize that he's there until you see him on the screen and say, "Oh, that's him." I mean, oh my goodness. And he plays a militia man who is ready to just about kill anybody.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a really chilling scene. It also features Nick Offerman as the president.
I love Nick
And
Offerman, and he is really good at being chilling, and but he's a comedian at heart, right? And he's
yeah.
funny, but Meyer.
Well, in this case, he's trying to play somebody who's coming across as being reasonable but chilling at the same time. And that's kind of a very curious tightrope to try and walk. He does it really well. He's not really in the movie all that much. I wish he were in it a little more than he is because he is so good in the
Yeah, he's
part.
great.
But I really like this a lot, and I think it's important that people see it, if for no other reason than to just grab on to the message that the director is trying to deliver here, because I think it's very, very important. There are a couple of sequences that drag just a little bit, but all in all, I was really very impressed. I really like Alex Garland as a director. He's best known for making the movie Ex Machina and Annihilation. And he was kind of off track with his last release, but he's back on track clearly and squarely with this film. And I'm really very impressed with what he came up with. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 stars.
Excellent. Nice. Did you see today? I know his first name's Alex. I think it's Parker, but the actor who plays Reacher, and he came out against, the Christians and saying how could you be a Christian and support Trump? Because he's so anti-Jesus, anti everything that Jesus would have promoted, that you can't possibly be serious.
But he's got a
And now that the quote unquote Christians are, oh, gee, that was my favorite show, but I don't know if I can watch it anymore. Come on. Come on. You can't watch TV anymore because his ideology. Okay, we can live with that.
go see this one as soon as you have the chance, because I mean it really is good and it really needs to be seen on the big screen.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, so next we have a film that came out kind of late in award season. It's available now for streaming, called Origin. This is the story of the writing of a book by Isabel Wilkerson that really kind of blew the lid off of a lot of social and political observations regarding the way society works. And specifically, when she starts off kind of very curiously interested in the Trayvon Martin shooting, but that serves as a springboard to her writing a book where she begins to look at the question of racial prejudice and discrimination further, and finds that when you look at a lot of cultures around the world, prejudice and ridicule and discrimination aren't necessarily based on race. She discovered through her exploration and study of things in present day and past India, as well as in Nazi Germany, that it's based more on the question of caste than race. And when you look at the whole caste system, you begin to discover that it's just based on arbitrary designations that you decide, okay, well, we're going to discriminate against this group because we don't like them.
It was
But they're
clear.
not, there's not necessarily a racial component involved in every case. And in America, so much of it is just focused exclusively on race that we can't see the bigger picture that, okay, maybe race is the driving defining factor in the US, but in Nazi Germany, it was Nazis versus Jews. They were all white. Okay. And when you look at the Indian caste system with its various strata, they're all brown. There's no racial question involved there. This is a social matter, not just a racial matter.
It was so interesting and such a good film and so well done. It was and the way she brought you along to understand the complexity of the issue, and
Yes.
then finally, you delve into it. And what was chilling and interesting, I think, was the idea that Nazi Germany had looked to America,
Yes.
what they had done,
Yes.
and took all of that. I said, we're not gonna keep them alive though. We're just gonna kill them. But we
Yes.
take all these rules and laws and use them for our own benefit. Wow, that was something.
Yeah, and it's interesting to show how easy it is to change it if you put your mind to it, because she presents a number of different anecdotes throughout the film. For example, in Nazi Germany, the story of the Nazi party member who ended up falling in love with a Jewish woman, and suddenly he was able to throw away all the Nazi prejudices. Like, well, how can I believe that if I'm involved with a woman I'm supposed to hate? You know?
And the way they dehumanized you by taking away an identity and just shaving your head, taking away your clothes, making you look like cattle or something so that you couldn't distinguish one person from another. You couldn't humanize them and look them in the eye. They're just over there.
Yes. Now, the other thing that's interesting about this movie, too, is it tells the backstory involving the author herself, who had gone through a series of personal tragedies and was at a very low point in her life. And she knew she couldn't stay locked in despair for the rest of her days. She had to find some way of getting her life back on track. And it was this book and this story that got her life going again.
Well, she was
And
an
at the same
Israeli
time,
daughter.
delivered a very important message to all of us as well.
Really,
That's a
really.
really hard mix to put those two very distinct and different, story threads together in one picture and make it work.
Ava DuVernay did a fantastic job. Ava
Yeah, I mean,
did
Ava
a fantastic
DuVernay
job.
is such an underrated director. I mean, she did a great job a decade ago when she made Selma, and she's done a tremendous job here. I'm a little disappointed that it didn't get more recognition and attention during award season.
I think people find her a little off-putting, maybe a little and this is just what I've heard, that people find her not aggressive, but maybe the ego is too much or something. She's not gonna get in a relationship, she's not gonna get married because she just wants to be a filmmaker. Some people don't like that, some
Well, I
people.
think a lot of it has to do with the fact that she's unrelentingly outspoken.
Well,
She's
that's
not
it.
gonna be,
People
she's
don't
not
like her.
gonna shut up. She's gonna tell you what she thinks. And if you don't like it,
I
well, then
love
you don't
that.
like
I
it,
love that about her. But
This film really, brings forth a rather, I guess you would almost call it radical viewpoint in terms of how we view society. And having that awareness and having that knowledge, I think, is important, because once you know that, you have a basis to look at a way for how to change things so you don't perpetuate these systems, because they're all arbitrary to begin with.
I think one of the best points in that movie that they had mentioned, and it, was if your children are the most important thing to you, why would you let an animal look after them?
Yes,
You wouldn't.
exactly.
You wouldn't. And so they knew that the African Americans were not animals. They knew that they were intelligent. They knew that they could trust them to look after their children. And yet they still chose to perpetuate
Yes.
this idea that they were, not intelligent. Not, just underneath us,
And not equal. And I mean, you see that in the anecdote toward the end of the film with the story of the little black boy who was on the baseball team.
Yes. Oh,
and
that
was
was so
not a
sad.
lot.
Oh my
That
gosh.
really was gut wrenching. I mean,
It
he had a
was.
little league team, and they won a championship, and he was the only one who was not allowed to participate in the celebration simply because he was black.
And when they put him on that raft, it's like, why did you do that? Why bother? Like, what was that about? Don't touch the water. We'll have to clean the pool. Oh my God. Like, they got rabies or something.
And that was just in 1951. That wasn't all that long ago,
This is
So
amazing.
I really recommend this
I do
one
too.
highly. But it's the kind of movie that I'm going to caution viewers that they have to pay attention to it. It's not the kind of movie you can watch very casually. You know, you can't, be hanging the drapes while you're doing this or ironing or whatever. I mean, you really have to sit down and watch and concentrate on what this movie is saying, what
Little
it's
long,
trying
but
to
it's
do.
really, 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 really worth it.
Yeah.
Really.
So I'm gonna give this one four also.
I give it
Four.
4.5. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Okay.
Okay, so next we have a trio of films that are all having to do with heroic and uplifting, compassionate messages. The first one of them being One Life, which is a film that tells the story of an Englishman named Nicky Winton, who in the 1930s worked tirelessly to help Jewish children from Czechoslovakia escape the encroaching Nazi German party into their country. Everybody said that he was crazy. Everybody told him you couldn't do it, but he worked tirelessly to get 669 children out of the country. And the story begins with Nicky in his elderly years, played by Anthony Hopkins. He's sort of disenchanted with the way things have gone. He feels guilty over the fact that he wasn't able to do more. He also is sort of disappointed that the story, which was a big time in 1938 when he was organizing this, had kind of fallen off the radar and been forgotten. But he ended up contacting a friend of his and showing him a scrapbook of his days from when he was in Prague working to get these people out. And he then, in turn, worked to make sure that his story was told more widely and that people got to hear about who this person was and what he did. And it really helped to change Nicky's life. It turned him around and made him realize that he really did do a good thing, even if he didn't necessarily do as much as he had originally hoped he wanted to or thought he could.
Hey, one is better than none.
Yes. Because one of the things that he did not consider at the time in the 80s, when he was again in his elderly years, was the impact of not only the children he helped to escape, but how many descendants
Yeah.
came from these children who were also ultimately spared from Nazi tyranny simply because he got their parents out in time. It's a really great story. Now, the one problem I have with it is the first half of it is a little talky. It's a little meandering. It's going through, all the stuff that they went through to set up the program, and it can get to be a little dry at times. However, the second half, the viewers are going to be rewarded with a really heart-tugging story in terms of what he accomplished, the recognition he was able to obtain as a result from it. And also looking back on all the people who helped him to get this carried out, most notably his mother, played by Helena Bonham Carter, who was sort of, she was working the end of the program in London while he was in Prague working to get these children out. And she was a real spitfire when it came to approaching the British government saying, you've got to start doing more here because you're dragging your feet, probably because of some kind of ethnic prejudice. And she got the job done. So the two of them working in tandem made quite a formidable team. And that comes through really loud and clear in this film. It sends a message to, I think, a lot of us saying, when we face situations that we think are impossible, they're not. They can be tackled. And when you put your mind to it and you put your faith and your belief and your conviction behind it,
He was no more special than either of us.
no,
He just did it. That's
no.
the difference.
I mean, actually, even initially, his mother was somewhat reluctant about him going to Prague because of the potential difficulties he might face. But he said, we have to do it because our relatives were German by nature and got out of Germany before World War I broke out. We owe it to these kids and these people to be afforded the same opportunity that we had when we got out.
Yeah,
And that's all he had to say to convince her.
Prague was the only country that didn't get bombed during the war. And it's like one of my favorite places to go. I absolutely love Prague, but it's interesting because the history, because all the buildings are still there. So you can walk it and just see all the, the World War I, the World War II, they're all there in their glory.
Yeah, and the movie was filmed in Prague too. So
Yeah,
I
it's so
mean,
beautiful.
so this one, if the first half had been stronger, I would probably give it a higher mark. I'm going to give it a 3, but if I had to like take the movie and divide it into two, I would say the first half would be a 3 and the second half would be a 4,
Okay.
because the second half really is quite good, quite moving.
I love Anthony Hopkins. I think anything he does is pretty good.
Yeah, and he's got a really good supporting cast in there too. He's
Helena
got
Bonham Carter, I
Ian
love her.
Olin playing his wife.
Oh yeah, she's great.
He's got Jonathan Pryce playing the friend who helped him get the story out. So I mean, and Johnny Flynn, who plays the younger version of Nicky, they're all good. They're
Yeah.
really great cast.
That's awesome.
So for our second inspiring and heroic film, we have Cabrini, which is the story of Mother Francesca Cabrini, who immigrated from Italy to New York to help the downtrodden people in the Five
Children.
Points neighborhood of Manhattan, which was like one of the worst ghettos in the city at the time.
Yeah. What a
She
tragic story.
originally wanted to set up a mission in China. She was denied. She went and talked to the Pope and said that I believe this is my calling in life. I want to do this. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll let you do it, but I want you to make one change. I want you to start out in New York first and then go from there. And that's what she did. And she ended up building a series of orphanages and hospitals. And she was fighting the prejudice against the Italians in New York at the time. We're
She
talking the
was
late
very ill. Even
1960s.
when she left, she was ill. She knew that she had almost drowned as a child, so her lungs were very weak. So when she came to New York, it was like really bad for her. And they expected her to live maybe a year or so, but she carried on for
She ended
years.
up living to be 67. I
Yeah.
mean,
She was a young woman when she arrived. Yeah.
So I mean, it tells a very inspiring story in
Cool
terms of
story.
what she was able to accomplish, what she was able
It's a
to do.
feminist story too, because the men were so against her. What it was like, well, you're a woman, what can you do? That was the added in Italy, in Rome, that was the thought. And when she gets to New York, they go, well, you can raise money, but you can't do it from any of the people and any of the politicians and anybody that we know. So it's like, oh, okay, thanks very much, for
Yeah, and
helping.
actually, even before she left Italy, the cardinal over there, before she got to meet with the Pope, said basically, just go back to your convent
Yeah, just be a
and be
nice little
content,
girl. Yeah.
be a good little girl.
Exactly.
And she was another, like Nicky Winton's mother, she was another spitfire who just refused to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make my way here.
So just to like really put the emphasis on what Francesca did, there's all kinds of institutions named after her. She built what, 63 hospitals, 200, I don't know
Something
how,
like that, yeah.
100 hospitals in Chicago. There's a one that named after her around the world. She's in almost every country in the world has a health hospital institution. And like from this little nun mother who, probably in her 20s, who went to New York. Like she established all of this big, huge empire. It's absolutely phenomenally amazing.
Well, actually, it's interesting too because here in Chicago, I mean, she's like an icon because not just because of her hospital and clinics and so forth, but also this is where she died. And
Yeah.
I mean, she's like a
That's
she's got
great.
shrines all over the city and so forth. I mean, she's a big deal
Big deal,
in
big
here.
deal. I was so happy to see. I love this movie so much. I was so happy to see it, and I thought it was so well done.
Well, now this is the one kicker I have about this one. It's a very good story. And I emphasize the word story because when I did some research on it afterward, I found out that the script plays kind of fast and loose with a lot of the facts. For example, before they left Italy, she told her sisters, we have to speak English now when we get to America. She didn't speak English when she got to America. One of her sisters had to do the translating.
Okay.
Okay. The mayor, there was no such Mayor Gould played by John Lithgow in the movie. He's a composite of other politicians. The opera singer.
He was realistic, though, I think.
the opera singer who she approached to help, you know, raise money and so forth, he didn't exist either. So, I mean, you know, I don't mean to be a nitpicker about this kind of stuff, but having been trained as a journalist and a historian, these are some of the things that I get a little troubled when they start fudging the facts a little bit. So I think it's important that viewers know that this is a fact-based story, but it's not gospel.
She still did all those things.
She still did all those things, but the story, the screenplay and the story presented here, it's not gospel. So bear that in mind. And, you know, if you can live with that, then you'll be okay.
Yeah.
So, the performances are all good. The production design and cinematography are very well done. I'm actually kind of surprised that this movie has had the staying power in theaters that it has. I mean, it's been out for like almost 2 months and it's still in theaters, which
word of mouth is spreading on this.
Yeah, film. Word of mouth. And I mean, also for a movie with religious themes, I mean, how many movies like that stay in theaters for a long time? So
people are craving goodwill. I think they're craving something positive.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you definitely get that message with this film. You know, the idea of being charitable to others. And the other thing, too, is that you see that in many ways, her character is presented very much as a realist.
Yeah.
She's not somebody here who is like, you know, lost in quoting Bible verses all the time.
No, she's not looking to
being
God.
A Pollyanna, you know, cleric good. About this stuff. She's very hard-nosed and realistic.
She's like, God helps those who help themselves. So I'm going to go help myself.
Exactly.
Her zeal. Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm going to give this one 3.5.
Okay.
It would have gotten higher if it had been a little more accurate, but.
Okay. It didn't bother me. I loved it. If you want a good story, go watch it.
So, and then our third film about inspiring stories is a documentary called Radioactive, The Women of Three Mile Island, which is available now for streaming.
God, this was scary.
This is was kind of a sleeper for me. I had only heard about it through an email. And it tells the story of a group of women who lived in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the site of the nuclear accident in 1979, who began getting concerned not long after it took place over the fact that things were not under control the way the media and the way the company officials and the way the government was trying to convey. They discovered very quickly that this accident was far worse than anybody knew. And they were making it their cause to go out and let the public
know. I think they knew what they said.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And very conveniently, the official sources didn't have sufficient records to be able to prove what the women were claiming. So, you know, these people in officialdom had sort of an out, as it were.
Yeah.
But they kept looking and kept pushing, saying, listen, our kids are getting sick. Our peers are getting sick, and you told us there was nothing to worry about. So they ended up pushing and pushing and pushing, and they didn't always achieve the success that they wanted to get.
Yeah.
But they did help to raise awareness considerably that resulted in the cancellation of plans for a countless number of nuclear power plants.
You're lucky to get a young fledgling lawyer who was really to help.
And you know, the other thing too is that in addition to fighting the bureaucracy and the corporate world, they were also having to fight their own gender discrimination as well. In the fact that basically these people in government and corporations were saying, oh, just be good little girls and go home and bake cookies.
Yeah. Again.
You know, which they would not stand for.
Yeah.
I'm really glad to see that their story has finally come out because it's been kind of under the radar for a very long time.
Yeah.
But in terms of the impact that they had, while it may not have been terribly big specifically related to this incident, the long-term impact has been, you know, quite strong. And it was also important that they had an important high-profile ally working with them at the time in Jane Fonda.
Yes.
3 weeks before the incident took place, She was in the movie The China Syndrome, which was about a nuclear accident. And the ironies between the release of that movie right before this happened and then that accident actually happening were just so uncanny. And Jane Fonda, being always the outspoken person that she was, she found, a sympathetic audience in these women and said, "Sure, I'll get right behind you." And she's interviewed in the film, talking about what she did and
And
the
behind her
impact
came
of
the Truth Patrol to deny everything
Yes,
that she
exactly.
said. But it was a very chilling documentary. I thought it was a little slow at times and not as well done as it could have been, but the facts are the facts, and it was chilling. And
Yes.
the fact that, nobody wanted to put the correlation to all the people who died and got cancer within years, even years after. Obviously, it's going to take years for some people to get it, but they wouldn't draw that line, but the line is clear to see. I never understood why they would never move. Like, why wouldn't you move? But they didn't. They stayed, and everybody stayed. But their neighbor got brain cancer, and her husband has esophagus cancer, and the children had this cancer, and all kinds of cancers everywhere. The animals were getting cancer. The babies were being stillborn. There was so much going on, and the fact that the government lied, they lied through their friggin' teeth. And even the President Carter came and assured everybody, well, it's probably okay now,
Yeah.
but the one thing, one of the moms said when her child had got home and he was vomiting, and she had talked to, was it a doctor from Hiroshima? And he said, well, what color was it? And she goes, it was like comet blue. And he goes, was it this blue or that blue? And he goes, that blue. He goes, oh, that's iodine poisoning. Like
Yeah.
that, he was poisoned, radiation poisoning. So they knew, like they knew.
Well, as far as why they didn't move, I can't really say for sure, but part of me was thinking that the damage may have already been done,
Maybe.
and they might have said, "Well, this is our home. We're not going to leave,"
But I think you
because
just move and
the
get slower.
exposure, when the incident occurred was so, the levels were so high, apparently, that even if you did move after the fact, you probably might wouldn't have been able to escape the impact or the effect of it.
Possibly. But that one journalist, the female journalist, I mean, everybody in her office got cancer except for her. Knock on wood, right?
Yeah.
Years later, everybody had died, but she was still standing, going, there's still a story here. There's still a story here. God bless her, but that would have been scary. I think, I don't know. With the potential to leak and continue to leak, and you didn't even know if it was leaking,
Yeah.
I would have left regardless. But they stayed and they fought, and they're still fighting, and they're still meeting, and they're still, getting together on the anniversary of the accident.
Well, and how many nuclear power plants have you seen being built like recently either? I mean, they did have a lasting impact in that regard in terms of saying, okay, this isn't going to happen anymore
I
because
wouldn't want to look at those every day. Like that would just
no.
put fear in my heart every single day, looking out my window and seeing those towers.
Exactly. This one is, like I say, this one is kind of flown under the radar, but it is available on streaming from multiple platforms. So if you want to check it out, check it out.
It is crazy that people
I'm
have
gonna give
that
it 4 out of 5.
I always get amazed when I see these that somebody had the presence of mind to take photographs and video, like movies,
Yes.
like when they were at the conference, like when they were at the, people were talking, somebody actually took film of that. And I'm like, wow, like that's crazy. You
And this
wouldn't.
is, we're talking going back to like the late 70s and 80s when that kind of equipment was not
You didn't
widely
have a cell
available or
phone.
widely used. I mean, the fact that we have a record of that, I think, is really pretty significant.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. So kudos to them for being so smart. Like they were smart, but they're still baking for money. They're still baking, but not like the politicians wanted them to do.
So now that we've had our fill of all these films with kind of heavy theme, we're going to finish off with something light. And that's a new absurdist comedy called Problemista. This film was originally supposed to be released last summer, but it was delayed because of the actor strike. And it just came out about 6 weeks ago. This tells the story of a young guy who lives in El Salvador. And he has a very vivid imagination and wants to become a toy designer. So he ends up coming to the U.S. to live out his dream, and apply for a mentorship program at a major toy company. The one problem, though, is that he has to be in the U.S. to apply for it and to be able to take advantage of it, which means that if he's going to come here, he has to come on a work visa and maintain employment for as long as he wants to stay. Well, he lands a job at a cryogenics company, but an accident occurs that potentially could have cost the client, from being thawed. So he ends up losing his job, and he's essentially got 30 days to try and find a new sponsor so he can get a new visa so he can stay and apply for this internship. He ends up getting involved with one of the clients from the cryogenics company, who is this really wild and whacked out art critic played by Tilda Swinton.
She's always over the top.
she's the curator of her late partner, who's frozen at the company, and she wants to stage a show of his work to help raise money to keep paying for this curation. And the young guy says, "Well, yeah, I can step in and help you with that. If you want that, I'll gladly do that if you'll be my sponsor, so I can stay here." Well, it ends up he gets put through his paces in terms of all kinds of crazy situations in terms of working with her. And it's kind of like it goes from bad to worse, from one crazy situation to the next. And the story is told with some very interesting cinematography, production designs, sets. I mean, it's really very clever in the way the film is put together. And it's also really out there in terms of its absurdist sense of humor. The would-be intern is played by Julio Torres, who is a former staff writer for Saturday Night Live, and he brings a lot of that strange, wild wackiness to the film and to his character, and especially to Tilda's character. I mean, she's just really off the wall. It's very funny, but it also has an important message in it, in the fact that it shows that good things can indeed come out of bad situations, because it seems like every time something bad happens, it opens a door to something new that's going to help them, even though that new door ends up opening to another bad situation that has to be resolved. But it really shows that, you know, there are silver linings out there as long as we, you know, have faith in seeing them realized, and that we can use them, you know, to see our dreams come true. This movie is a lot of fun. I mean, it's just, you know, weird and wild. And if you really like things that are absurd, I think you're really going to enjoy this one.
You know, like we're so down on these immigrants from El Salvador and from different places. And you see somebody who's just so desperate to live out his dream, and to deny that just seems so unfair. You know, oh, we're here, but you can't come. Like, come on. You know,
well, and also the fact that he was forced into having to actually come to the States just to apply for it, when in a lot of cases with these kinds of mentorship programs, doesn't matter where you're located, you can apply for it online, period. You know,
exactly.
So, you know, that's just something else that he raises in the film is, you know, don't make it needlessly difficult on those who are interested in pursuing these dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, and what did Isabella Rossellini? She was.
Oh yeah, she's the narrator, and her dialogue is really very witty in terms of the way it's written. So I mean, that adds another bit of humor to this as well.
I like her.
So I really enjoyed this one. It was worth the wait. You know, sorry it didn't come out when it was originally supposed to, but when it got released in March, I was like one of the first ones in line to see it, and I really, really enjoyed it. I would give this one 3.5 to 4 stars.
Okay.
And it's still in theaters in some limited locations. I'm guessing it will probably be available for streaming not too far down the road.
I haven't seen it in the theater.
Okay. So there we have our 6 films for the month. These are all good choices.
Yeah.
You know, inspiring, fun, enjoyable. But before we go, I just wanted to make a quick mention of a couple other things. I know it's been over a month now since this happened, but in our last broadcast, I presented my Oscar predictions. And I'm proud to say I went 6 for 6 on the top categories.
Congratulations.
I have a blog on my website, brentmarchant.com, if you want to read about the results. I also want to make mention of an upcoming blog that should be probably published next week, which is going to present my wrap-up of the another one of the early years film festivals, the Chicago Latino Film Festival.
Oh, okay.
This is the first time I've attended this festival. I've seen a couple movies so far. I've got a couple more to see, and I'll give everybody the lowdown on what I saw next week when that blog gets posted. So
nice. Thank you, Brent. Thanks for that.
We've got a lot more good stuff coming up in the next few weeks, and that's even before the summer movie season starts. So keep an eye on your listings. There's some interesting things coming out, and have at it.
Yeah. There's some good stuff out there. There really is. And, you know, if you're open to foreign, if you're open to new ideas and new things, like, try them. All I can say is try. I'm always pleasantly surprised when I, you know, move away from mainstream, usually.
Well, yeah, especially lately when I've been seeing so many announcements coming out about upcoming plans that the domestic studios and distributors are planning for. And there's no imagination behind any of it. It's sequels, it's reboots. I mean, how many times
another
do we
Popeye
have...
or another, you know, like, you got to get creative here. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, how many times do we have to see some of these same stories over and over and over and over again? I mean, come on, folks. You know, other people in other places have enough imagination to come up with stuff that's new and different and refreshing. Why can't you do the same?
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. All right. Well, goodbye, Facebook.
We'll take care.
Let me stop that. And let me stop recording. Oh, did I stop recording? No. There, stop recording.